it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for making us part of your day. It's time for a college football discussion with Danny Cannell, brought to you by Bet Online. Check out betonline.ag for updated college football playoff, Heisman, and college football week 7 lines. And a good afternoon, Danny. How the heck are you?
I am fantastic. Hope you guys are doing great out there in Dallas, ready for a big showdown out there. Nice rivalry game. But the first 5-6 weeks of college football have been awesome, man. They've been a ton of fun. I think we're in for some fireworks on the back end of the season too.
Yeah, it is. It's been amazing build up, an amazing season already. It's fun to watch this line move from the Longhorns favored by 3 to now a 1-point underdog. Is this the John Mateer availability swinging it, or how do you see this matchup?
Boy, if it is, I think it's a lot of speculation, like reckless speculation, which is not unusual, right? When you have an injury to a quarterback that is that important to the team, and when they're interviewing Chipotle pressers and they're trying to get the inside scoop on whether Mateer is going to play, it kind of speaks to this area around this coverage. But I do think that to me would almost indicate that Mateer is going to play, even though that's not what I think. I mean, I think if he does play, I'm very curious to see how his grip is on the football, that throwing hand where he's had this thumb surgery. How does it affect ball security? I will still be surprised if he does play. But I also think it's probably a little bit of people selling on Texas from what we saw at the Swamp and them getting beat by a Florida Gator team that's very average, and a defense which was supposed to be really good didn't look as good there at Gainesville. So it's probably all of this is sort of the perfect storm for a lot of people to come back to Sooners.
Yeah, Danny. I mean, Texas, their line of scrimmage just got bullied against Florida. How surprised were you? I mean, obviously, we talk about Arch, and as a former quarterback, I'd love to hear your thoughts on where Arch is and his development right now. But maybe we overrated Texas and the team around him.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think we overrate everything, right? I mean, it kind of happens in our society, and we get out ahead of ourselves. But I did think the defense, which had been really good and was really good against Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State has still – that offense has been humming. They've been – got a quarterback who's completing 80% of his passes at Ohio State, and Texas looked – their defense looked great against them. I think it was one of those games where they just sort of had a letdown game, got caught a little bit, by surprise. And I think Florida's offensive line was probably the thing that was most surprising, the way they were able to get some movement up front. But I do think Florida was one of those disappointing teams where if they were coming off a bye, they were kind of, had some excitement, some motivation. It was at the Swamp, the home team. They just feel like they had the game of their year so far, and Texas had a letdown game. It's sort of that perfect storm. And I do think Arch, I will say this about Arch, because I've been one that was not all into the hype. I think he's still going to be good. I thought it was just going to be a roller coaster ride this season. I think there were going to be pretty massive ups and pretty massive lows, and I think you've seen that so far. But I do think he's getting more comfortable in the system. I do think Sark is scheming up guys where you're seeing him have more opportunities. And I would actually expect Arch to play pretty good in this game. He's thought, now that he's played multiple times in environments like at the Horseshoe in Columbus, at the Swamp, he's getting more comfortable. He's just got to kind of settle down, and I think his process is kind of on par with what I thought it would be, where – it'll take some time for him. He's going to have to make mistakes on the field, because that's the only way you can learn is by going out there and making those mistakes and then correcting them. He's making pretty good decisions with the football. I know there's interceptions in there, but that's sort of normal. That's par for the course. So I think he's going to be fine. I actually think this might be a week where Arch could step up and really start to silence some of the critics that are way too over the top, calling him a bust or a flop. I get it. He hasn't reached the expectations, but those expectations were impossible for almost anybody to meet.
Danny Cannell, CBS College Football, with us here on The Fan. Mizzou and Alabama this weekend. How do you see this one shaking out? Could Alabama get really tested here?
Here's the thing. I'm a little bit shell-shocked from last year with Missouri, because last year Mizzou started the season off 4-0, and everybody was raving about them, and I thought they were a little bit overrated. Now they went on the road to Texas A&M last year, and they got smoked 41-7. Now, there is a massive difference this year. They are playing at home in this game. It is in Como, but I'm a believer in Bama. I think Bama is a really good football team. I think they're the best team in the SEC. Since that loss to Florida State, it's almost galvanized that locker room where they're all coming together, and their defense had gotten guys back, like Tim Keenan on the defensive side of the ball. Jam Miller's been healthy. They've been running the football a little bit better. Ty Simpson is playing probably as good as anybody in the country, and he's stretching the field vertically. So I think Alabama's going to score on Missouri's defense. The one question mark I have is Ahmad Hardy, the running back for Missouri, is the best running back in the country, arguably. Yeah. He's leading the SEC. He's up there. That's the one thing I do concerns me a little bit. If Missouri can score on Alabama, this could be a little bit of a higher scoring game. But still, I would trust Ty Simpson more than I trust Bo Pribula, the transfer quarterback who has a lot of people from Penn State wishing he hadn't left. But I do like Bama in that one. I like Bama laying the 3 points there.
Okay, so you got Bama best in the SEC. Where do you have the Aggies at, Danny?
I'd have them right below them. You know, their win against Notre Dame was really impressive. I know it was a high-scoring game, and they won by 1 point. But I think they're just a tier below. And it's probably just from a lot of it's probably, you know, a little bit of brand bias. Alabama's been better historically. We've seen collapses before for A&M. But I tell you, finding those receiver, you know, portal receivers in Craver and Concepcion on the outside, getting depth now in the backfield, now that, you know, Le'Veon Moss, we knew what he could do, then have Owens all of a sudden come up, show what he can showcase, and Marcel Reed finally really getting settled in Colin Klein's system. I would put Texas A&M right there, just below them. They absolutely are in the conversation, but I think this is one of those big tests for them where they're supposed to win a game against Florida. I'd like to see them put the hammer down. And by the way, I didn't even mention the job that Mike Elko's done with the defense, that now that he's taken over play calling, much more discipline, which they've kind of struggled with, some of the penalties. But I do think this Aggie team is right there in the conversation for one of the best in the SEC.
Danny, why do I feel like that Indiana's going to go to Oregon and get slapped around?
I think it's because of what you saw last year, right? They were, you know, top team last year, top 25 team. They were sort of the surprise. And then when they played in Columbus against Ohio State, they got outclassed. When they went to South Bend in Indiana, they got outclassed in the playoffs. So I think that's because it's human nature. But I think even Kirk Cinetti, I just talked to him about an hour ago, he was telling me he thinks this team is better, he said, than they had last year. I think they definitely got an upgraded quarterback in Fernando Mendoza. But the big question mark is how do they handle the physicality up front of Oregon's offensive and defensive lines? That's usually the last step you have to take, because skill positions, you can find them. Those big 300-pound bodies, they're not sitting on every street corner. Mm-hmm. And out, you know, a lot of the top programs in the country, Ohio State, Oregon, Miami, they scoop all of them up. So that's really the big question mark for me. But Indiana's QB is special. Fernando Mendoza, I know a lot of people have him as a top pick in the NFL draft potentially. He does have the type of arm talent and the escapability that can really make this thing interesting. But I'm with you. I actually think Oregon is in the conversation for best team in the country. I kind of do feel that Oregon kind of puts the hammer down on him. It's in Eugene. Mm-hmm. Austin's going to be rocking. But I would not be shocked. Like, I would be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked, though, if Indiana is sitting there at the end and they could have this game in the fourth quarter, and then kind of anything can happen.
Danny Cannell, college football with us here on 105.3 The Fan. What do you think of my alma mater, the North Texas Mean Green? I didn't think I'd ever be asking you about their playoff chances, Danny, but we got the biggest game in school history tomorrow night, South Florida coming to Denton. What do you think about us?
Oh, I tell you, your QB, Drew Mestemaker, he has been outstanding, the freshman there. I worry a little bit about you guys being able to keep him, because usually when you have a group of five quarterback playing as well as he is, all of a sudden those bigger schools come calling with, you know, some pretty hefty offers. So it's kind of a good and a bad, right? He's been outstanding. So I feel a little bit similarly to some of the other teams I've talked about. It doesn't mean I don't think they can get it done, but South Florida is a little bit more battle-tested, right? South Florida, they beat Boise State pretty handily in their opener this season. They did go into the swamp, so they've used – and they got a win against the Florida Gators. They played at Miami where they got outclassed. But I think much like the point spread dictates, I think this is going to be a fun game that comes down to the wire. And I think very clearly the team that wins this one is going to be in the group in the driver's seat for the group of five playoff team. Boise State is done with two losses. They're out of it. I do think the American champion is probably going to be the team that goes there. But it is an outstanding job they've done there in Denton with North Texas. I mean, they look really, really good, like a good football team. This will be a really fun matchup.
It's Danny Cannell with you, brought to you by Bet Online Tech, the clear favorite to win the Big 12 from this point forward. How established are they? Do you think they're the favorite in the conference for the foreseeable future with everything they got going on out there with the NIL money? And where do you see them in the big national picture?
So they're clearly, I think they're the best team in the Big 12. What they did against Utah a few weeks ago was so impressive, where they dominated from start to finish, and they've really handled almost every opponent that they've faced so far. And even when their quarterback goes down like he did at Utah, Baron Morton's out, doesn't matter. Next man up, their offense doesn't miss a beat. But we've already known Baron Morton and the offense could put up points. The biggest difference is on the defensive side of the ball, and that's where a lot of the money was spent. When they go in and get a guy like David Bailey from Stanford on the defensive line, a Romello Height from Georgia Tech on the defensive line, that's been the biggest upgrade. And kind of like I was talking about before with some of the bigger bodies that are out there from the top-tier teams in the country, that's where Texas Tech has spent the money well. So they've got some of the bigger guys in the Big 12. I think they will be the team from the Big 12 that ends up the last team on top. I do wonder how they'll do against the very best. But I absolutely think they can win a playoff game or two and shake some things up, because Joey McGuire has done a phenomenal job getting all those transfer portal pieces coming together on one page and playing outstanding football. They are absolutely the real deal. And I had my doubts, because it's hard to just buy a roster, but they have absolutely delivered on what they purchased.
What do you know about this Belichick fiasco, Danny? I mean, you think this could be could this be over in a matter of weeks?
I can't even recall a bigger disaster hire that we've seen. I mean, the NFL, I think when Urban Meyer went to Jacksonville to take on the Jags job, I thought that was a disaster unlike anything we'd seen. The college level, I think this is kind of similar. And I do think it's for a reason on both of those, because I think coaching college kids and coaching NFL players is an entirely different ballgame. And I think that's why Urban struggled in the NFL. And I think that's why Belichick is struggling with college kids. I mean, he's got more of a transactional relationship, treating kids like pro. He's not really a motivator, not really a team builder. He's a great teacher, and he's a great X and O guys. But in college, you really do need to motivate your players. I mean, go look at the best coaches in our game, guys like Dan Lanning and Kirby Smart, Steve Sarkisian, you name them, all the coaches that we talk about. They're great motivators, and they always talk about getting the team to come together. And I just think Belichick thought he could come and his genius mind would work, because, you know, he's a great mind and he would be able to exploit some of those weaknesses. It hasn't, because the team doesn't look like they're playing for him, and it doesn't look like he's even trying to appeal to that aspect of the game. It has been even a bigger disaster than I thought. I thought it could be boom or bust. But it has been beyond bust, where I think it is, and I would have laughed. You would have said at the beginning of the season, do you think he's not going to survive? I would have said, no way. Of course he's going to survive. But I think it's very real. A lot of the rumors, where there's smoke, there's fire. The more information that comes out, it feels like people are turning on Belichick, even some people that were his biggest backers. I would not be shocked. I would not be surprised if November, they play Stanford at home, November 8th. Mm. Stanford's not a very good team. If they lose that game, I think that might be a date to circle. And they have Duke at home, and Duke's a really good football team. I think Duke could blow them out. I don't know if there's a firing, though. I think it might just be one of those ones where even Bill Belichick looks around, surveys the landscape, says, you know what, I don't want to tarnish my legacy any more than I already have. Let me just take as much as possible a graceful exit as I can and just rip the Band-Aid and go look somewhere else. I think that's probably the direction we're headed.
Danny, are the kids at Penn State trying to get James Franklin fired?
They might be. I'm preaching patience to Penn State fans. I know it's harsh, and I know that losing to UCLA, who was one of the worst teams at the Power Four level, feels like the worst loss in history. And as a 24.5-point favorite, losing on the road there was embarrassing. But it sort of was the perfect storm, right? They had just had a heartbreaking overtime loss into a game they had circled against the Oregon Ducks. Then they have to travel across the country to a team that just fired their coach, and they were sort of rallying around a new coaching staff and a young offensive coordinator who kind of has a fresh set of eyes and a fresh mindset in there. And then all of a sudden the game started snowballing against them. And, you know, Penn State, all of a sudden they look up the scoreboard and it's 14-0, and, you know, UCLA gets an onside kick. It was sort of the perfect storm. I still think Penn State could rebound. Now, I have my doubts about just how good they could be. Like, at the end of the season, I thought coming in they would be a national championship contender. Clearly, you have to reevaluate from that perspective. But I still think they could be a 9-3 team, which how many programs across the country, there's a lot of them, would love to have that problem of, man, we're a 10-11, 10-win team, 9-win team, and that's not good enough for us. And I would just caution Penn State to be very careful, because we've seen other programs. Nebraska comes to mind. They got sick of going 9-10 wins with Bo Pelini. They fired him, thought they were going to get an upgrade, and they've been searching for the next head coach for 15 or 20 years. You got to make sure, if you do depart from James Franklin, that you have a very clear-cut upgrade. And until I see that, I'm very skeptical. But I would tell Penn State fans, let the season play out. You still could win at Ohio State. I know it seems crazy. You still have Indiana at home. There's a couple signature wins that could be on the table for them. And I remind them, you did take Oregon to overtime. You were one play away from potentially winning that game and totally changes in complexion. So they clearly have room to improve, but I still think that should preach patience for Penn State fans.
Speaking of coaching searches, Arkansas, maybe they just elevate Bobby Petrino, but there's been a lot of buzz locally that maybe they'll try and get Rhett Lashley away from SMU. Do you think that Arkansas is a better job than SMU right now?
Not currently. And I think this is going to be a really tough decision for Rhett Lashley, who would be my first call as well at several schools. And that's what I think becomes more intriguing too, because if you see Auburn come open, which looks like it might be more likely happening than not, if you see Florida opening, which looks like it could be happening more likely than not, those become really attractive options as well. But since you asked just about Arkansas and SMU, Arkansas's athletic director was out on record saying, we don't think we can compete for national championships. Like, we just don't have the resources, which is kind of mind-boggling, thinking about the Tyson Foods family and the Walmart family that they have behind there, how they cannot be in a position better financially. I get it, though. Hey, maybe that's a plea for him to try to get those money to come in there. And they just had Calipari come in there from Kentucky basketball to Arkansas, to take over their basketball program. But if I was Rhett Lashley or any coach thinking about taking the Arkansas job, I would want to have some sort of financial game plan to show me that I can compete on a fair level playing field with the likes of Alabama, Georgia, Texas. You know, the list goes on. Texas A&M, all those schools who have more resources. And if that wasn't a very emphatic, here's the evidence and where the money's coming from, so that we are on par with those programs, I would not leave SMU. Because I think Rhett Lashley is a perfect fit for SMU. I think he can wait. He can be patient, see if a better job opens. SMU has, deep enough pockets to be able to compete on an annual basis in the ACC and then in the playoffs as well. So I think it's going to be an interesting decision for Rhett Lashley, but I think if it's just those two, I think it's pretty clear cut to stay at SMU.
One other thing before we let you go, Danny Cannell, what do you think of the way Dak's playing quarterback right now?
I think he's been great. I've always been a Dak fan. That offense looks like it's clicking on all cylinders. He just has to make that next step in the playoffs. I've always felt like he was a quarterback you can win a Super Bowl with. It might not be because you can win a Super Bowl of, and we've seen that in other years, when maybe he's fallen short of expectations or the injuries have been derailed a couple seasons too. But I think Dak is elevating himself into that. I've always felt he was a top 10 quarterback, but I do think he's starting to knock on the door of potentially being a top 5 quarterback. And the experience and the leadership that he brings to the table is pretty invaluable. So I'm a big fan of Dak, and I'm rooting for him to kind of break through one of these days and take that big next step forward.
Danny Cannell, brought to you by Bet Online. Thank you, sir. And enjoy the weekend. We'll catch up with you soon.
Awesome. Appreciate you guys. Have a great weekend.
Cheers. BetOnline.ag, updated college football playoff, Heisman, and college football week 7 lines. Okay, we got the C-note. You got a Cowboys player missing from practice, and another Cowboy giving the thumbs up, green lighting his new nickname. That and more coming up next year.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Nation. Yeah, buddy, here we go. It's time for the C-Note, Cowboys News of the Evening. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Next chance is to get your 2025 G-Bag Nation flag tomorrow. Cold beers and cheeseburgers. Join us there in Euless. Lucius is going to be along with us. Saturday, Mansfield Hurtado, 10 to 10:30 in the morning. Fort Worth Hurtado, 11:30 to noon. And then, of course, the Highland Hotel Party, 2 to 6. And that'll be a good time there, watching the game and having a time. It's a pool party, Red River style, on Saturday, 2 to 6 at the Highland Hotel. And, of course, your chance to get a G-Back Nation flag there as well. Maris Leofau's given his thumbs up to the Hawaiian Punch nickname. So we got the peanut punch for Tillman. You got the Hawaiian Punch now. He's greenlit it.
Hell yeah.
That was originated by Kyle Yeomans. And I believe Patrick Walker reported or relayed the all clear today. You know, you just never know if someone's going to resonate with a nickname or not. You know that, Chief.
100%, man. You know. Shout out to Kyle Yeomans.
Kyle?
Yeah. Good for him. That's some of his best work.
Yeah, it's rare that he does something well.
Oh, wow. Shots fired. No, he's a very talented individual, but that right there, I mean, kudos. That should be at the top of the resume. It's a hell of a nickname.
Donovan Wilson back at practice today, so that's a good. QB Joe Milton was missing personal reasons. So hopefully, you know, you're not going to have to depend on Joe Milton, but hopefully everything's right in his life. Pass rusher Dante Fowler not present at the portion of the session open to the media. I think such a big part of feeling better about this defense is what Houston and Fowler were able to do with the pass rush. You got to be able to generate something like that. I mean, they led the NFL in pressure rate or pressures, I think maybe in week five. So I don't necessarily need that replicated, but it's got to at least be average. It can't be as horrible as what it was early in those games. So, and we need Fowler to be that guy, and James Houston and the other guys pitching in stuff is the way I'm looking at it. Thursday night football, Giants and Eagles. More Philly content here for you. It's interesting. Jackson Dart says he patterns his game after Jalen Hurts. Huh. And Daniel Jeremiah actually made a comp last year in the draft feeling like Dart plays like Hurts, although he's not as athletic, not as strong, not as fast. It's a comparable style, but anyway, highest rate of three and outs through five games. We know the Eagles have that record for this year. It's also the fifth highest rate since 2000.
Oh,
yes. Wow. Yeah, you're looking at some of the most atrocious defenses in the history of the league for their comparisons. 2001 Washington, 2009 49ers, that might have been like a Blaine Gabbert year or something. 2013 Jags might have been another Blaine Gabbert year. And then the 2000.
Saying Blaine Gabbert's a bad quarterback. it's the I never would have guessed
the gift
that.
Of Gabbert, man. Not something you want.
Man, it was definitely something good to see if you were on the other side. Okay, Jeff Cobb gives us an update on the man versus zone debate that was so good last week. After Sunday's win, Diggs complimented the pass rush, saying, "We say when we get back there fast, it's called instant grits." Diggs has been vocal about his comfort playing man coverage, not zone. Eberflus was asked about it today, if playing more man versus the Jets made players like Diggs feel more validated. He said, "We're going to make decisions based on what we feel is best, based on the matchups, based on what we have, and I don't like grits either." I don't think Flus is in a good place.
I don't think he I don't think he likes Diggs talking about this. Really don't. I think that he's sick of the discussions about, and I haven't, trust me, I haven't talked to Matt. I used to be able to text Matt, and he doesn't answer me back anymore. So
he heard you rip him.
Well, I think there's been some times where, you know, you can get a little stubborn with things, and you know, I was the same way. But he hasn't answered me back. By the way, Fowler was sick today. That's why I missed practice.
Okay, not bad. That's good news.
So,
not that he's sick, but just it's something more serious than that.
I think that Matt honestly is tired of the discussions. He's like, "Oh, this is what I play." Even though he came from a system, where he was with Rob Ryan that played heavy man coverage. And then maybe he made his career switch and said, you know what, playing zone and cover two and all that, that's the way I'm going to do it. But he probably feels like, though, he's hearing all this praise for your offensive line coaches, you know that, and he's the pinata right now.
Yeah, you know? That's not a fun place to be.
No.
You're giving up a lot of points. But I just hope it's that he's stubborn and patient with his guys and not stubborn and toxic with the outside world, because I think he might need a little bit of help right now.
Sure, and he did play a little bit more man last week.
About 17%.
And it didn't go well.
It's been a struggle.
So, I mean, he's thinking like, okay, if you switch to man and I'm doing what you guys want me to do, at least go out there and show me results, guys.
Yeah.
But they gave up, I think it was 2 touchdowns?
Yeah, they did.
On man coverage?
Absolutely, they did.
And there was probably more meat left on that bone if you go back and watch that All-22. I mentioned how Garrett Wilson was beating Bland. Justin Fields just didn't throw the football. So, again, like, I do think there is Flus being stubborn, but I also, the personnel on the field has to help out their coach.
George Pickens talking today about knowing the motive of other teams. I guess this was last night. When it comes to trying to get him over the edge, quote, with me, I've kind of figured out I'm so good. That's the only way you can try to take me out of the game. Pickens, 5 touchdowns in 5 games so far. The light bulb has come on for him a little bit. That sounds like, you know, good coaching, good culture. Yeah, I don't think we get this George Pickens kind of effect with Mike McCarthy being around here. I think this is a direct result of the energy that Shoddy and Dak have created with their leadership, with their whole attitude thing, their positivity thing. And there's quite a gravity to it. You know, people want to be involved in it.
Yeah, and it's actually you're playing in a fun offense, and you're actually, you know, you have a good quarterback throwing you the football. You've done some level of winning at this point. Like, everything is kind of going in the right direction. I do wonder how many Steelers fans are just hate watching Cowboys games, waiting for him to crash out so they can good about it.
Go on the message boards and you can see that. Yeah, there's people now stepping up and saying, hey, did we get fleeced on this one?
Steelers fans are like, come on, please have a temper tantrum.
And they're waiting for the crash is what they are. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think this, you know, just goes to the brilliance of the message coming from Shoddy. It's like, it's not like, hey, you're broken, you need to fix yourself. It's like, dude, you're so good. You're just such the man that the only way teams are going to be able to beat you is if they take you out of your game mentally. Yeah. So just, you check that box off, you're unbeatable. Yeah. And now George is out there like, that's right, I'm unbeatable.
That's brilliant.
Yep.
But Steelers fans are also saying their argument is that the Steelers weren't going to sign him anyway.
Yeah.
That's their.
Which is true.
Good job of getting a third round pick. We weren't going to sign the guy. You know, that's their mechanism.
There's a lot to the intolerance in Pittsburgh of personality. You know, George Pickens is just one. Devin Bush is another. Same stuff with Devin Bush. Like, everybody was mad at him. He's got to go. He goes now. He's in Cleveland, and he's having a season and a half playing his best football since he was young. And when he was there, it was like, come on, Devin Bush, you got to figure it out. And you got to get your lunch pail, and you got to understand that the Steelers brand is different. And you got to be this, and you got to be that. And, you know, I think Shoddy comes from Pete Carroll, where it's like, you come here, you be yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to have fun to put the team first.
We'll embrace you.
However your personality is fine. You know, we're here to play football and kick butt and support each other. And, you know, I think it, certainly Pittsburgh benefits from that.
Yeah.
You know, Pittsburgh gets a lot of guys that, you know, might be blue collar dudes, and they just want to get down there and the secret's in the dirt, and they're going to resonate with a lot of guys like that. But some other dudes slip through the cracks, and it's just got to be the perfect fit. Like, I think a lot of people are talking about how the Buccaneers are the perfect fit now for Baker Mayfield.
Sure.
You know, you got to line up the organization and the personality sometimes. And hey, maybe the Cowboys are going to be the benefit of the Devin Bush thing as well. If they were listening yesterday, I think Brian was watching the film.
Yeah.
And
I take Devin Bush. Absolutely.
Thumbs up to the idea. Yeah. Okay. There's early odds out for next Sunday's game between the Cowboys and Commanders on FanDuel. Mm. This is the earliest edition of Guess the Spread ever. What would you think it is?
Oh, man.
For next week, with the it's a home game with the Commanders.
It's at AT&T.
Cowboys by one.
I think I would go. I think I'd go Commanders. Commanders by 2.
It's Commanders by 3.
You guys are all over it. It's Commanders by 2.5 next week at AT&T. I think we gotta pump the brakes. I mean, you got good vibes coming off the Jets game and everything and the offense against Green Bay, but the numbers, which is what Vegas bases a lot of things off still, you know, are kind of shading your team. They don't believe your offensive line is good, even though it's performing well, and they think your defense is an aggregate of every bit of bad football that it's put on tape so far. So you got to reverse that narrative one way or another. Todd Archer saying CeeDee Lamb continues to make progress from his left ankle sprain. Don't rule him out for that Washington game is what Todd Archer is saying. I think he could play right now. I think he didn't have to miss any games. It's just that one game. I'm a sprained ankle specialist. Sprained a lot of them. I can eyeball it, tell you how many games you should be out. I think they're just being extra careful with Lamb. Okay, we got Krusty's Corner coming up next, buddy. Where are you taking us?
Yeah, let's talk about this Panthers defense.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll do that next.
Shoot Chats, the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Time now for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Here's the king, Brian.
Hey, kids. Your old pal Krusty's going to teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Waters.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate you. Thank you very much to Reliant for being a part of this one. Does anything make you nervous about Carolina's defense? Anything you've read or heard about?
Yeah.
Derek Brown, Trayvon Moehrig.
And Nick Scorton. So the rookie, and we didn't love him coming out of A&M.
Nope.
But they're using him to his strengths. A&M would have him, and it was tough to decide, like, is he a 3-tech? Is he a 5-tech? Like,
right.
Where exactly should he line up? Watching them specifically against Miami, I like they had him as a stand-up outside edge rusher.
Sure.
And they did some of the loops with him that we were talking about the Cowboys right. had success with, and he actually played really well. And he is a guy that can get after the quarterback.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny. They've had trouble getting after the quarterback. If you watch overall,
yeah.
But I know exactly what you're talking about watching the
Miami game.
It just seemed like Miami was like the great deodorant for this team.
It might just stink.
Yeah. And no. I'm saying that one of these things that Miami, even though Miami was up 17-0, they'd just completely fallen apart there. But I think defensively there's absolutely, and I think the guys that you mentioned, you need to be concerned about. I think you absolutely need to be concerned about Derek Brown. I think you need to be concerned about A'shaun Robinson too.
Yeah.
Playing as that like almost like he could play like that one technique tackle inside, or he could play a zero technique nose, and then they could cover both guards.
Yeah.
You know, with the way that they play their front. But I would be, because I worry about with Robinson and maybe with Dallas, their ability to run the football or try to run the football, and how does that match up with Hoffman always take place? But you're probably going to get a lot more double team stuff inside and trying. They, you know, Dallas, the one thing that I think that the scheme has done really well is the fact that it's not asking these Cowboys offensive linemen to come off the ball and win one-on-one all the time. Like when they're trying to move somebody, I mean, Booker, when he was in there, Booker can move somebody one-on-one. Smith can move somebody one-on-one. But the scheme's not asking them to do that. The tackles are helping, you know, with that. They're using the angles. We talked about the pulling. You know, Zach, you mentioned all the pulling and the trapping and stuff like that they've done. But they're playing to the strengths. But you got some guys, like I say, that pretty good point of attack players. And I mentioned a guy like Robinson. Mm-hmm. So I worry about how much is Hoffman going to be matched up against him one-on-one. Something to keep an eye on in this game for sure. I don't think they can rush the passer particularly well as a group. I think they're gonna try and do things with, it's like they as they come off the ball, it's almost like what Dallas was doing earlier in the year or some of these early games was just rushing up the field and trying to get off blocks. nobody's winning with any regularity. There used to be a time where Carolina had guys that could win.
Burns.
Yeah. They had guys off that, you know.
Clowney.
Clowney. Back in the day, who was a guy from that? Was it Green Bay that knocked the ball loose from our...
Jeff Heath?
No, that knocked the ball loose from Murray.
I'm thinking of Julius Peppers.
Julius Peppers.
Oh, that's right.
Julius
yeah.
Peppers' name. But yeah, that's they've had guys like that before. They just don't have that guy right now.
Pat Jones had 7 sacks last year, but he's just an occasional flash. He looks like a good athlete.
He looks like a really, really good athlete. But if you when you watch him play, like he is plays really, really tall. The guy that won him is DJ Wonnum.
Yeah.
Is like the guy to me, number 98. He looks like the guy to me that has the most pass rush ability. When they have these guys that are real, they're real tall, they're linear guys, and they play that way. They let you get their hands on you, and so I think it's one of those things that you know, if Dallas finds a way, I think Dallas can run the ball on these guys though. I say that as far as maybe with the stuff with Robinson, to keep an eye on him. But I kind of feel like that if you could play edges with these guys, and I mean edges in a way, if they're going to play these fronts where they have 3 inside your tackles, the down blocks, the combo blocks, the pulling, the things like that, they've struggled. Stink was right, by the way, about your cornerback.
J.C. Horn.
He plays in the boundary the whole way. That's what he does. He is a boundary corner. And when I mean a boundary corner – is he plays to the short side of the field. So if the ball's on the right hash, the boundary would be to the defense's left, offense's right.
Why does a team do that? Why would a guy make you a boundary corner?
Maybe the thing now, this is where I'm gonna try and explain this, because you've seen guys like he was taking one spot after Patrick Surtain.
Yeah.
I think Surtain is a better player of routes than this guy. This team plays zone about 90% of the time. They play zone more than the Cowboys do.
I'm glad you said that. It's a third in the league in terms of cover 3.
Yeah, they're going to play a lot because they're going to try and get your safety more down. They're going to try and get him down because that's where at the Raiders, that's where he was.
Merrig. The former TCU guy.
Merrig.
He is good at that. And they don't have a lot of guys, to your point, that are good at zone. Like Mike Jackson, former Miami corner, the Cowboys drafted him. He went to Seattle, played a lot of zone coverage there.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, they're trying to, and J.C. Horn's always kind of been a gambler type.
He has, and that's the thing about it is when you talk to the Cowboys scouts about him as a player coming out, he was a gambler where Surtain was more of a buttoned-up guy, more you could rely on him more. He wasn't gonna put you in harm's way. But you watch him play, they're playing 7 yards off and they're giving up plays. You know, they're giving up inside routes and stuff. So to your question, Dawson, is boundary corners, sometimes you don't have to cover as many routes. Mm-hmm. And they're maybe trying to keep him from having to cover so many routes. They might be worried about his health though, too, a little bit. Sure. Him being banged up. But he's a guy that's not really super interested in playing. And I know Stink was talking about run the ball his direction. That is an absolute possibility there when you watch the way that they play. So
I'm here for it, man. Javonte Williams will make you earn it.
But the stuff with – he does not have to, as that boundary corner, have to cover a lot of routes, especially anything breaking to the outside. Everything he can kind of keep everything inside to him. And then adjust and run with the coverage. But most of these boundary corners will use the boundary as an extra defender. Just they'll force that guy into the boundary, and then they won't let you run any routes from that.
So they run almost 50% cover 3.
Yeah.
And Dak against cover 3 this year, 3rd in the league in passer rating, completing a league high 83% of his passes versus cover 3 and a league high 5 touchdowns. They might want to change that tendency. Because Dak will probably pick that apart.
I don't know if it'll change it for the better, though. I love this matchup for the Cowboys offense.
I do, too. I feel like, though, that if, to me, it's like, we'll see what happens at the guard spot. We'll see what happens if Smith is back in there. I think that will help them inside. with some of the things that they're trying to do. And I also feel like that maybe at left tackle too, they can match up with Guyton being back in that as well. The protection, the play action stuff, I think is going to be good. I don't think these linebackers are particularly good for this football team. But I'll say this though, that the corners, you know, if I mean, it's not one of these things you say, oh, go find the scrub, because I think the corners, I think these corners are good. I don't think they're great. I think they're good. Whereas last week you were able to kind of find, oh, go attack this guy or go attack that guy. I don't think that's really necessarily the case. But I think in the zone coverage, if these guys are going to give you 7 yards cushion, give Pickens and Flannoy and those guys the ability to run routes in your nickel, getting about 5 yards cushion the way these guys are playing, I think you're free access in these routes, by all means, take advantage of that.
Roseboom had a good game against Miami, but you think that was just because it was Miami?
I think Miami, I just...
Miami is so bad, dude.
I just think that there were some things. Him and Wallace, they were talking about that maybe he was calling the defenses, and they took that away from him, you know, and they gave it to Wallace, and so that let him play a little bit more free. Yeah. I don't know. Like I say, I don't particularly like either one of these Wallace linebackers at all, and I don't really particularly worry about their pass rush all that much. But if they're going to play a lot of zone coverage, you know, good luck with that and free access in these routes. I think the Cowboys can make some plays, and I think they can run the ball on the edge on these guys because they'll find a way to trap these guys. You can watch some of the early season, the early games, like watch Jacksonville against these guys. Jacksonville did a really good job with some of their pulling schemes and trapping schemes. They got guys to go up the field, and then they would just trap them, and then the ball would be inside. So. The Dolphins had no explosive plays against these guys. The Dolphins' offense was awful against these guys running the football. Everybody else has been pretty decent with that. So I think that the Cowboys will be just fine here going against this defense.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Krusty's Corner every afternoon at 3:40 here in the G-Bag Nation. Trade deadline's coming up November 3rd, November 4th. It's within a month, and I'll have some trade deadline updates here coming up for you at 4:40 on the Fan. But up next, Woolchuck, I need my fix, man.
Don't tick off the playmaker trades and headbutts. That's next to the Nation.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.